Do you remember the story of Rip Van Winkle? The Washington Irving story from high school or middle school English class. Rip falls asleep for 20 years in a sleepy hamlet on the Hudson River in New York. And when he falls asleep, a nearby inn has a picture over their door of King George, because King George was the reigning monarch of England, and the colonies were still just the colonies. So 20 years later, he's rubbing his eyes, getting the sleep out, when he registers the sign now has a picture of George Washington, a man he doesn't know, the president of the new United States. Rip slept through an entire revolution. Last week, I talked about a few early Unitarians who traditional folks called heretics. These nonconformists set the feel of our congregations. We're proud rebels and heretics even today. But for a moment, I want us to consider the Unitarian and Universalist movements as a whole. So last week I mentioned that most Unitarians and Universalists are come-outers. We came from another denomination and converted to being Unitarian Universalists. Well, Unitarians in the young United States were come-outers as well. The earliest American Unitarians were Congregationalists, which are now more likely known by the term United Church of Christ. When European immigrants first came to the East Coast of the future United States, they set up villages, and there was a Congregationalist church at the center of every village. While services were held there on Sunday morning, the rest of the week it was town hall. And legislators had offices there, and all the court cases were heard there. You went there to pay your taxes. Everyone in these New England villages paid taxes toward the Congregational Church, which paid for hymnals and music and the minister, as well as paying for legislatures and offices and courts. So in those churches, they had no stewardship campaign. Our Paul Borman was replaced by the tax man. Separation of church and state wasn't a U.S. ideal at the time, and the pilgrims seeking religious freedom had remarkable tunnel vision. They wanted religious freedom for themselves, but they didn't really care about religious freedom for the Quakers, the atheists, the Catholics, the Baptists, and the Anabaptists. They drove them out of town and sometimes even out of state. This system of religion and state being one might have been the norm as European immigrants moved west, except that rabble-rousing Unitarians got in the way. You see, science was becoming really popular. Science was cool. And the press trumpeted discoveries in biology and chemistry that called into question the writings of the Bible. Could the world really have been created in seven days, or was it created over billions and billions of years? And what was this stuff about evolution? At the same time, Europeans were exploring the Far East, and they were learning about Buddhism and Shintoism and Hinduism, and word of these faiths spread to the new United States. And people started to wonder, maybe Christianity isn't the only game in town. Maybe we don't have a monopoly on religious truth. The skeptics and the radicals in New England wanted to hear more reason, more science, and more about other faiths from the pulpit on Sunday morning. Harvard University, which later became the first Unitarian university in the United States, graduated a crop of ministers who would not take the Bible literally, who doubted the divinity of Jesus. And they were slandered with that old insult, Unitarian. And soon traditional Congregationalists and Unitarians were arguing over the theology of the church. Were these churches Christian? Should they remain Christ-centered? Was science a bounty of discovery about our glorious world or a fast track straight to hell? Hundreds of congregations up and down the eastern coast were divided, split in two, with Unitarians, families were split in two as well. And so finally these cases went to court, and the decision was that Unitarians could keep the buildings and Congregationalists had to move to a new space. So the old joke goes that Unitarians got the silver and Congregationalists got Jesus. In New England today, most town centers have a Unitarian church directly across the street from a slightly less old Congregationalist church, and they are facing off over the centuries. So you can see that Unitarians even then were a come outer faith. We came out of Congregationalism. But what about Universalists? Well, Universalists were come outers as well. Across the eastern seaboard and the south of the United States, a more fundamentalist Calvinist theology was flourishing. Revivals went from these tiny, tiny farm towns, one to the next, and preached hellfire and damnation. The message was simple. God was angry, it was our fault, and we were probably all going to burn for eternity. Universalists broke out of this movement because they believed in an all-loving God who wouldn't damn anyone. Early Universalists were actually inspired by parents, because they knew parents loved their children so much, even though they bickered and forgot to do their chores and knocked over the milk pail. If a parent can love their child enough to forgive all the annoying things children do, surely God could forgive us for the annoying things that we do. Universalist ministers were circuit riders crossing the rural West, preaching universal salvation. And the most famous early Universalist was John Murray, who said, "Give them not hell, but hope and an ever-loving God." So during the founding years of this nation, most Unitarians and Universalists, or all Unitarians and Universalists, were come-outers. And the rebel-rousing tradition didn't end there. When the denominations joined in the 1960s, they became a haven for non-Christians seeking a spiritual home. Humanists, interfaith families, Buddhists, seekers, atheists, and Christians were all joined to Unitarian Universalist congregations because we had advertising campaigns that said, "Whoever you are and whatever you believe, this is your church home." And it worked. In the 1970s, we were the denomination that ordained and embraced gay men and lesbian women, some of whom were comer-outers of other congregations, but most of whom were booted out of their congregations. Which leads to the question, who are we now? With other liberal traditions acknowledging or even praising scientific discovery, we aren't the only folks that accept evolution anymore. And there are even a few, although not nearly enough, traditional Christian congregations that accept gay and lesbian clergy people. So we're not the only place in town for liberal families to join anymore. Very few people among us believe in Calvinism and hellfire and the brimstone that drove early Universalists to proclaim God's unconditional love. So who are we? In 1966, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. gave the Ware Lecture at our Unitarian Universalist General Assembly. The Ware Lecture is the big lecture at General Assembly, which is our yearly gathering of Unitarians from all over the world. The Ware Lecture is a big deal. This year, at our General Assembly in Portland, Cornel West is giving the Ware Lecture, and I'm beside myself. I can't wait. I'm so excited. So I hope you'll join me there. I'll save you a seat. Anyway, in 1966, Dr. King gave a talk, and it was entitled, "Don't Sleep Through the Revolution." And indeed, his words should set the course for UU identity in this new century. Dr. King starts by telling the story of poor Rip Van Winkle. Rip, who fell asleep under King George and woke up under George Washington. MLK warns us that churches are in danger of sleeping through the revolution. King says it has always been the role of churches to broaden horizons, to challenge the status quo, to question and break mores if necessary. King reminds us it's not the role of the congregation to reinforce the status quo, but to shatter it, not to discourage progress, but to demand it. King was speaking again in 1966. A revolution was on our doorstep, and it was knocking loudly. Would we Unitarian Universalists sleep through the upheaval? Would we choose lazy complacency over uncomfortable horizon broadening? My spiritual companions, we are again in a time of revolution. Government-sanctioned police, violence tyrannizes poor black neighborhoods. Incarcerations of people and for-profit profits is modern-day slavery. Voting rights are erased. Underfunded schools mean there's no hope for poor black children. But the revolution is on our doorstep, and it's knocking so hard. I think the very wood is splitting. Will we sleep through it? Early in this century, Unitarians and Universalists proclaimed deeds, not creeds. Do you remember this statement? Deeds, not creeds. Does that sound familiar? It matters more how you live your life, what deeds you do, than what creeds you recite on Sunday morning in church. Deeds, not creeds means don't tell me what your church believes, but show me how it changes you, changes how you work in this world. I think there's some sort of a pandemic of cell phones. They're spreading all over. So don't tell me what your church believes. Tell me how your church changes how you move in our world. Tell me how it changes your life. And today I remind you, how you live in this world is what matters. It matters so much more than your personal theology. Tomorrow, we have the chance to open the door to the future of our faith. Unitarian Universalists today are the faith in action people. It is a natural revolution of our creedless, dynamic, come-outer faith. We are the folks that know that what matters is what our faith guides us to do in our world. Tomorrow, quite a few of us are meeting here at 11 a.m. You should come. And together we will march in the Martin Luther King Day Parade with our Unitarian Universalist siblings from all over the Puget Sound. It's going to be quite a group. We're meeting here at 11 to carpool, but you can also look for the UU shirts and signs at noon at 23rd Street in Cherry, which I think is the Central District, right? It's by Garfield High School. This is our chance to prove that our religion is not asleep, that we are not Rip Van Winkle sleeping through the revolution. King said, "It has always been the role of the church to broaden horizons, to challenge the status quo, to question and break mores if necessary." Tomorrow we stand with our siblings of color and proclaim that black lives matter, that racist police officers will not be tolerated, that the for-profit prison system that's locking up entire generations of African-American men must end. We are come-outers, and now we will prove that we come out in solidarity. Join me, and tomorrow, in every day, let's be awake for the revolution.